If you hammer it, screw it, fasten it, tighten it, cut it, seal it, bend it, solder it, or just want to know how, you're in the right place. Now, back to Rosie on the House.
Welcome back, Arizona homeowners, to Rosie on the House. I want you to know, many times we get to the office on Monday or Tuesday morning, and there's 30 or 40 or 50 questions piled up into the voicemail or the info at rosieonthehouse.com, and they start out with, I couldn't get in the show. All I got was busy signals. Let me just tell you that right now we do have an open line, so if you've got a question that you've been waiting all week to ask, now would be a great time to dial in. Toll-free number, 1-888-767-4348. 1-888-767-4348. And we have Jack on from Surprise who called with two questions, one on woodpeckers. And, you know, next week we are going to have a show specifically on the topic of critter control. We had a call earlier in the show during the Get Garden Hour of a fella in North Phoenix that had javelina completely destroying and ripping through his whole yard. Now we've got Jack and his woodpecker. We get the woodpecker question very often, and we get it even more often this time of year. I'm going to put you inside the head of a male Gila woodpecker. Now, only I can do that. I'm going to put you inside the head of a Gila woodpecker, and this is his mating season. And the way Gila woodpeckers announce that they are available for mating is they find the loudest surface possible and they ram their little woodpecking mobile head against that product. And the spark arresters on top of a zero clearance fireplace is a perfect sounding board for that male Gila woodpecker to announce to the surrounding female Gila woodpeckers that I am your man, I am available, the shop is open for business. Now, generally that announcement, like Jack says, comes at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and there is nothing louder than a woodpecker pecking on your spark arrester, coming down that steel-lined flue, entering the sound chamber of your fireplace, and resonating through the rest of the house. It is horribly loud. It sounds like a jackhammer on your roof. So here's what you do, Jack. The best, number one, most successful tactic we've ever found in that is buy yourself a couple of very large bottles of Tabasco and simply get on the roof or have someone get on the roof and douse the entire metal area with heavy, heavy doses of Tabasco. You might even take a sprinkling of cayenne pepper, and as the metal is wet with Tabasco, sprinkle the cayenne over the top of that. There isn't a woodpecker on the planet that will come back to that spark arrester a second time. And I always tell people, you can always tell if you got the woodpecker because he'll be flying upside down through your yard with a smoke trail coming out of the back end. Okay, that's when you know you got him. And he will find a neighbor's fireplace to start pecking on. Now, the creaking is something that we hear a lot of from homes that are a little bit older than yours. And I'll tell you, I'm going to give you a little history lesson here. About 20, 25 years ago, we started using less and less plywood. And we developed this product called chipboard, okay? And it's not layers of wood like plywood glued together. It's pieces of wood all glued together. And what we discovered is that you could not, when you put plywood together on your roof or up on your siding for shear wall, you get it as tight as you can, you nail it off as tight as you can, and it's there nearly forever, as long as any wood product can be. With this chipboard, what we found out is you actually had to space it and gap it. And Jack, invariably, that creaking noise is the fact that that chipboard at your house is too tight, and it is virtually impossible to fix unless or up until the point you need to re-roof your house. And then what we do, we strip everything off, we get back down to the base roof deck, and we actually take a saw and we cut a kerf in between every single piece of 4x8 chipboard that's up there on your roof. Until then, I'm sorry, there isn't a lot we're going to be able to do for it. 9 times out of 10, that is the creaking, squeaking noise, especially early mornings. So you got the roof creaking and the woodpecker pecking. It's just happy times at Jack's house at 5 a.m.
Appreciate the call. 1-888-767-4348. We've got the dirt. We've got the weeds doing their root thing, creating the airspace.
Yep.
We've got soil added to the top. Water.
Water.
How do we water?
Well, you know, there are many.
Wait, for people that aren't on flood irrigation.
For people that aren't
lucky
on flood
dog.
Irrigation.
Right.
That's cheating.
Well, and 25 years ago when I started looking for the urban farm, that's, you know, I was looking for a flood irrigated lot because I grew up here in Phoenix on a flood irrigated property. And I knew know the value of it.
Yeah.
So, but sans flood irrigation. Well, you know, there's the standard go out in the morning with the hose.
That's fun.
That's, you know.
You said you're lazy. So I'm thinking you've got some alternatives to that.
Yes, there you go. Well, and, you know, there's the whole drip concept, drip irrigation concept. There's drip tape, you know, which does it in big old long lines. There's, you know, drip emitters. So, you know, conceptually, drip works really well for vegetables.
Okay.
You don't ever want to put fruit trees on drip tape.
No.
Or really any kind of tree on drip tape. No, because what happens is you get this column of water that, you know, it drips for an hour, and you get this column of water that's maybe, you know, a foot in diameter to go straight down. And sometimes it doesn't even get straight down. That's why in the summertime when there's storms, you see all these trees blown down because they're on drip irrigation and, you know, they're getting water in the top 2 inches. So their
roots, that's where the roots are?
Exactly. And that's where the roots are. The roots aren't going deep. So with fruit, with any kind of tree, you want to get them good, deep water, which requires bubblers. It requires flood. It requires you to, you know, turn the water on, fill up a basin around the tree and let the water sink in a foot.
Very good. Well, we have a caller online that has, speaking of water, has a pool.
Pool. Oh, yes. Hey, I'm done with my pool conversation.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Is there something she can do with that pool to turn into a garden?
Oh, there's many things.
Okay.
So, first of all, it's a pool, so it's sealed. So, if you put dirt in it and try and water it, eventually it's going to fill up with water. So, eventually you're going to, you know.
And
have
the county health department loves that.
Yeah. Well, and eventually it's going to be a great big mud bog. So, you know, there's the breaking up the entire pool, breaking the bottom out of it, you know, filling it in. I think that usually runs about $5,000 to do that. Maybe, you know.
You're just about. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, about $5,000 to do that.
You got to compact it.
And you got to compact it. Right, exactly. You got to go through that whole process. One really interesting thing, a gentleman out in Mesa turned his swimming pool into what he calls a garden pool. He put a greenhouse over the top of it. In the deep end of the pool, he raises fish. And in the shallow end, he plants his plants and waters them with the fish water.
So that's okay. We've got to keep it sealed in the deep end. Did he bust up the shallow end?
No,
or is he growing the plants on like in containers?
In containers, yeah.
Okay.
And hydroponically. So, you know, in the gutters, he does, you know, he's doing the hydroponic thing. So, and they call that when you put hydroponics and fish together, they call that aquaponics. So that's another possibility.
Sounds like biosphere to me.
It's kind of biosphere-like.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of biosphere-like.
Yeah.
Which that I wish I had to come up with that idea because that is a cool idea.
Now that's also a safety issue as a pool. Then you have to protect that body of water.
Correct. Right. Correct. And he's got a greenhouse wrapped all the way around it. If you just want to fill it with dirt, you can, you know, jackhammer a hole in the bottom so there's drainage.
And your local city building will have specific requirements on how many holes are required. I can't. It's been a long time since
I've
done it, but
yeah.
I do remember crawling down in the bottom of pools, many of pools, and jackhammering, having to count.
Oh, right. Ten. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what it is about pools. That's a heck of a lot tougher material than flat 4-inch concrete.
Oh, yeah.
Now, on retiring a pool, our friend Jeff Getz would really be upset if we didn't mention deck over as well. I mean, you can deck over it. And then put raised planters on that.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, that would absolutely.
That's another great option. Retiring your swimming pool,
right?
Especially if you can't get heavy equipment in the backyard. Put a deck right over
then the deck, you can take that off later and recover the swimming pool.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. That's a brilliant way of doing it.
And what he does, he puts a pump down in the bottom, and so you convert your swimming pool and put a floor in the deep end so it never really collects a lot of water.
Right.
It's actually kind of a cool little area to store things.
Oh.
You put a little pull-down staircase in there and go down there. You store all kinds of
there
things.
There you go. Like that. Well, you know, pools are so dang expensive. My brother put one in a couple of years ago, and I was like, how much is it? Really? So, you know, actually demoing a pool, taking it out, it's costly to get rid of it, and you know, so
and there's so much solutions. And there's so much fun to take care of.
Oh, yeah.
We wouldn't have a pool if it weren't for Jennifer. Yeah, Jennifer is the pool girl at our house.
That's true.
Jennifer,
I never touch that swimming pool.
Oh yeah, when I was a kid, I had to take care of the pool.
Oh,
that was my job.
I used to have kids at home, and I don't.
Yeah, there you go.
We're here talking and discussing the concept of urban farming. A part of that involves and could involve water harvesting. Now, I know from my research, limited on the topic, that's a much bigger topic and a much bigger industry in the Tucson area and in the Prescott Valley area.
Yep.
I've heard from a lot of water harvesting companies that Phoenix is kind of on the shoulder of being practical, getting it done here. We're going to come back and talk more about that.
Perfect.
Because we get just not quite enough water for it to be a economic concern here. But if it's something you want to try and tackle, we'll talk about it here right after this short break. Right here, talking urban farming. Give us a ring. You want to have any question about raising something at the house you can eat, something you can dine on, something you can cook, something you can preserve, something you can can, something you can jelly? That's all happening right here today at Rosie on the House.